Welcome to the Transformational Leadership Podcast. This is your host, Hannah Anam. My mission is to help you lead more effectively and be an agent of positive change in times of disruption. On this podcast, we interview practitioners and leadership experts and have coaching exercises that you can apply immediately to your work challenges. Together, we learn how to achieve success and create workplaces in a world that work better for all. So today, my guest is Tammy Simon. She's somebody that I've been wanting to talk to for a very long time, and I think the pandemic made it happen for us. Welcome to our podcast.
Wonderful. Great to be with you. Wonderful. Thank you.
At the age of 22, Tammy Simon started Sounds True with a dream, a tape recorder, and a guiding mission to disseminate spiritual wisdom. You started that at 22. Over its 35-year history, Sounds True has produced over 3,000 titles, been nominated twice for the Inc. 500 list of the fastest growing companies. And Tammy now hosts the popular Sounds True podcast, Insights at the Edge, which has been downloaded more than 15 million times. She lives in Boulder, Colorado, and in British Columbia with her wife. I guess these days you're just living in Boulder, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
Traveling. They're not letting you in British Columbia, I imagine. Yeah. So I've talked to a lot of people on this podcast who are a force for good in times of disruption. I'm not sure that any of them actually started when they were 22 years old. And I remember for me, Tammy, at the age of 22, I was mired deep in my corporate finance books at Wharton. And so you started a company at the age of 22. And tell us about what compelled you to start Sounds True.
Sure. I don't know at the time if I had this consciousness of, I want to start a company. It was more that I was unemployable and I had a very deep inner drive to be of service. I didn't so much use the language of being a force for good at the time, but I knew that I had received so much from my family. I had received so much in terms of educational opportunities, and there was something in me that was a deep drive to contribute and give back. And after I left Swarthmore College as a sophomore, having studied the mystics, and come to the conclusion that any mystic worth their salt wouldn't get a degree in mysticism. They would go out and live that life. I traveled through India, Sri Lanka, and Nepal, a tremendous opportunity. I discovered the practice of meditation. And at that point in my life, I fully gave myself to that practice. I remember lying with my arms outstretched, my head face planted down on the ground at Buddhist temples all throughout India and Nepal. And I offered myself in that posture. Could I somehow take this practice that had been so meaningful to me, that had helped me find a sense of inner home, and could I bring it to as many people as possible? So that was my prayer. And when I returned, even though I was under a lot of pressure from my family to complete an academic degree, that's not what happened. And I started saying a prayer, God, I'm willing to do your work. Please show me what it is. And then through a series of synchronistic events that I'd be happy to share with you if you're interested, Sounds True came into being. So when I came out to Boulder, Colorado, I originally came out here to go to what was at the time the first accredited Buddhist university, Naropa University. And I was interested in studying meditation and psychology because I wanted to understand what happened to me. I knew I was a changed person and I didn't really get it. But then I saw that I actually just couldn't pursue an academic path of any kind, even at the most alternative university in the United States. Even that wasn't going to work for me. But I wanted to continue learning. So I had an interview show where I interviewed spiritual teachers at the local community radio station. And one of the people I was interviewing, I became friends with. And at a certain point in this period of my life, so I'm just 21, college dropout, volunteer interview program, my father passes away. And when my father dies, I inherit a small amount of money. I inherit $50,000. Well, in today's terms, 36 years later, that would be more like $200,000. And for me, it was a lot of money at the time. And this person that I was going to interview for my volunteer radio show said to me, why don't you put that money into yourself? And I thought that was a very novel and interesting and creative idea. At the same time, I said, look, me and myself, we don't know what to do. Like, that's the core issue here. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And he looked at me. And interestingly, he's quite a successful entrepreneur himself. And he looked at me and he just said, Tammy, you know what you want to do. Come back in 3 days and we'll talk about it. And then this very odd thing happened. I walked out of his office, and as I left, it was almost like I was walking a few feet above the ground. It was a very weird experience. And I'd been reading a book by Eugene Genlin on focusing that talks about paying attention to body sensations as a source of guidance. Mm. So I was very interested in this. I was like, I feel different. I'm having some very odd body sensations. I feel like I'm walking above the ground. Mm. And then this gets a little more out there. But it's a true story, Hannah, and I'm not going to hold back. It's the truth. And, you know, over the years, some people have made fun of me as a result of telling this story. And yet, you know, I think right now, especially post-pandemic, you know, it is just time for us to be who we are, to be bold, to not hold back. So as I'm feeling this experience of walking a few feet above the ground, I heard a voice. Of course, I didn't know if it was an inner voice or an external voice. I didn't know. And the voice said, disseminate spiritual wisdom. Those three words. And they were three words I'd never thought of. And after I heard that, my feet hit the ground. I started walking again. And I knew that those were my operating instructions.
Wow. That is so powerful. I think I'm just reflecting on what you're saying, Tammy, and putting it in the context of today's world. I think there are so many of us that are right now in experiencing so much pain and anxiety and different kinds of emotional turmoil, whether we're unemployed or anxious about being unemployed or worrying about the health of loved ones or have faced grief with the death of loved ones. And it seems like having access to that inner voice that you're talking about, a voice of calm, perhaps a voice of clarity, because so much is so ambiguous for us. How do you access that sort of inner voice that gives us clarity in times of turmoil?
Well, first of all, I believe that voice, and for some people, it might not be an auditory reception. It might be an image or a vision that they see, or a dream that they receive, or just a knowing. I believe that that's available to all of us all of the time. And in fact, we are receiving that kind of guidance, all of us, all of the time. I fully 100% believe that. However, we block it out. We block it out for some very good reasons, because it will ask us to make big changes in our life, to take some big risks. I mean, I had absolutely no idea when I started Sounds True, if it would turn anything into anything. People say to me, how did you get the confidence at such a young age? And I was like, why are you presuming I was confident? I wasn't confident. I didn't know what was going on, but I was willing to experiment. I was willing to take the risk. Yeah. I was willing to say that this money came to me as a gift. Worst case scenario, I have to go out and get a job, which is what I was looking at doing anyway. So I'll go back to where I was, and I'll take this risk. And so I think we're getting that kind of guidance all the time, but it asks us to be brave.
Yes.
And it asks us potentially for the structure of our current life to change. We might have to quit our current job. We might have to change some of our friends.
Yes.
Or even deeper things may be asked of us. We have to move from one place to another. So I think it actually comes down to the courage to follow the guidance we're getting.
Yes. And what you just shared so reminds me of these nudges that I felt when I left my corporate career. I had felt like I just hit a wall. And then I had heard this little nudge saying, go to Sedona. And I started receiving all these little, like I would almost get, you know, something in email. It was about Sedona. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Sedona. And there I just spent a lot of time hiking in the canyons. And there I heard more clarity around, okay, it's time to do something that is really going to be hard. That actually eventually got me to leave my corporate career 20 years and right in the middle of recession. And you're absolutely right. It's very, very scary. And what I love about what you're saying is this notion of do little experiments, because, you know, the path, it doesn't seem like is like all laid out for you. It's almost like you have to take a little step and then you listen and then you fail and then you listen and then you take another step in a different direction and you listen.
Exactly. I think you just need to know the next step. That's it.
Yeah. So now I want to fast forward to the work that you're doing. And what really compelled me to reach out to you, Tammy, is I've been following some of your work. And I love this idea of the inner MBA. And I know that you guys are starting that. And I love the notion that we can find our way and listen to that inner voice, even as it relates to the work we do. Because for so many of us, we sort of separate our work from our spiritual lives. And what I love about it, I imagine that what you're doing is encouraging us to find a way to integrate all of that. So please tell us about the inner MBA.
Well, one of the things I started becoming aware of in myself is that there are these different, you could say, roots that informed who I am. So one early on is this deep interest in the journey of the mystics, as I described, as I was introduced at Swarthmore College. And even as a young person, as a teenager, when I read books by Hermann Hesse and Alan Watts, I mean, those books were my guiding light as a person. They were my best friends. And it was because finally something was being spoken to me in the pages of those books that met my deepest hunger as a person, that the world could never meet. And so that is a line, it's like a bloodline in me that is very, very deep. And then also as a person, I like to be independent. I like to be the master of my own fate, if you will. And before you know it, if you're that kind of person, it appears to me in the world today, you're self-employed.
Yes.
You're an entrepreneur. You're working for yourself. Yes. So that's just the kind of person I am. And, you know, early on when I started working in public radio, I thought, so where will I go? I was like, no, I need something that doesn't have a ceiling. Because that's part of it too, is I wanted to be not just kind of in charge of my own destiny, but I wanted something that there was no top to. I could just keep, okay, an entrepreneur is born. Yeah. And then the other thing is I love to create and to serve. And to me, this idea that each of us has gifts and we want to give our gifts to other people, that's how we're wired as human beings, as members of a human community, is that we want to be an asset to the group. It's in our biology. If you're not an asset to the tribe, you could get kicked out, you know, No, you want to contribute to other people. So these are all just kind of like bloodlines in me. And the idea that I would separate them was anathema to me. How could I? That's like separating out my own circulatory system. This is just who I am and how I roll. So anyway, so I carved out my own path that had all these different elements to it. And over time, what I saw is that more and more people started getting, first of all, interested in mindfulness at work. Mm. Oh my God. And I think what I saw is that people had this realization that if you are better able to manage yourself, you'll be a better manager of other people. And I was like, oh my God. There is a call for what we've been doing at Sounds True, which is practicing the wisdom traditions and their core virtues at work. There's actually a call for that in the society at large. And that's all of what informed and gave birth to the Inner MBA.
Yeah. I love your story because I think it's so relevant for today's times. We feel like we've been sleepwalking, so many of us, in terms of following the patterns and not really being awake for the experience of life. And I think in the future of work, more and more of us, I think, are going to find our way to gig work. We're already doing that. And with all of these furloughs that are happening, I think that it would be a real loss if we decided to go for the next job that pays minimum wage and offers healthcare. It would be such a service for us to do our own inner work to figure out, what is that voice? Why am I put on this earth? And how can I make my greatest contribution of gifts, as you were talking about, to the world? So tell me about the curriculum of the Inner MBA. Like, what can people expect?
It's a 9-month training program that Sounds True has created in partnership with LinkedIn and also with a conference organization in the Bay Area called Wisdom 2.0 that brings together the intersection of technology leaders with social change and wisdom teachers. And at the end of the 9 months, you get a certificate of completion from NYU, a division of NYU called Mindful NYU. And basically, there are three different tracks in the curriculum. There's a storytelling track where you learn from CEOs, like the former CEO of Patagonia, Rose Macario, and Joey Bergstein, who's the CEO of Seventh Generation, and Lorna Davis, the CEO, former CEO of Danone, a $4 billion company. And from these CEOs, what I think people will garner is that this is not idealism from a small spiritual wisdom company in Boulder, Colorado. This is happening on the floor of all kinds of companies in different industries where people are saying, we will be a force for good at business. We will treat our people as if they are ends in themselves, not just a means to some other bottom line end. And so they'll talk about their difficulties, their challenges, and they'll answer questions from all of the people who sign up to be participants in the program. So that's one track, the storytelling track. Then there's the conscious business trainer track. And we have your friend in mind, Dan Goleman, who will be introducing people to the core principles of emotional intelligence at work. And then Scott Shute, who's the head of mindfulness and compassion training at LinkedIn. And then we also have Karen May, who's the former VP of people operations at Google, and Otto Scharmer, who is from MIT, who will teach his U theory of creativity. A woman named Lisa Leahy, who along with Robert Keegan wrote a book called Immunity to Change. And we'll be looking in that about what part of us is hidden in the shadows that's actually what's keeping us back. You know, because this is one of the things I've seen a lot when I work with people and in myself. We say we want to make these changes, again and again. We get our 360 reviews, we commit to it. But then it's a year later and we've made like a little progress, but not really. How come? Yeah. What's holding us back? So she'll take us all through the immunity to change process. Yeah. So that's the trainer track. And then we have a wisdom teacher track where we have really some of the leading spiritual teachers in the world today, including Jack Kornfield, Tara Brach, Sharon Salzberg, Rhonda McGee. And we'll be learning practices like self-compassion. We'll be going through a whole mindfulness training. Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at how can we bring loving kindness to the workplace. So then there's also that track. And it all comes together and people go through the program in an 8-person learning pod. And the importance of that is that you have a chance to practice these new skills in a safe environment. Try it before you bring it back into the people you work with on a day-to-day basis.
And so who are the ideal people that are going to be part of this? For you, who are the folks that really matter to be part of this?
People who want to really go through an accelerator of growth. So at the end of 9 months, you're not the same person.
Yeah.
Your mindset has changed.
Yes.
How you approach a meeting. Different. You have a whole different quality of presence and listening about you. You have a whole new set of things that you're aware of in yourself about what your strengths are and what's holding you back. People who want to network and make new connections and new relationships so that they can birth the next phase of their career. I think it's really anybody who hears that inner guidance and says, I know that the source of power is me.
Yes.
It's me. It's not about the outer world coming to meet me in some way. Mm. It's about me emitting something different in the world. And I'm ready for a huge upgrade of the platform of my being, the platform of awareness of who I am. That's really who we put at Sounds True. We've been in the world of educating people on personal growth for 35 years. And we baked into this program everything we know about accelerating human development. So that's really how it's been designed.
What would it take to get CEOs of Fortune 500 companies to attend your inner MBA program? I feel like there is so much that corporations today impact in terms of the resources of the world, the numbers of people, the forms of employees, suppliers, customers that they impact. And if we could get a critical mass of the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies to attend this program, I think our world will be different in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, I think the pressure is on, and that those CEOs may work with individual coaches to give them their kind of, you know, private inner MBA, which is fine. And some of those coaches are coming to the inner MBA so that they have the skills. But the pressure is on those CEOs. And the reason, a couple reasons. One, there's now irrefutable evidence that if you're more emotionally intelligent at work, your company will perform better. And of course, this makes sense. How much time do we waste at work in drama, just in human drama? You know what I mean? Mm. That hurt my feelings. I can't believe you said that. But of course, we're not even saying it to the person who did it, saying it to someone else. So-and-so hurt my feelings. I can't believe he or she said that, and blah, blah, blah. So people get it, that it makes a company more profitable. It will create better shareholder return if you grow and move forward your adult development. So first of all, the pressure is on in that way. The pressure is also on in another way, which is the brightest young people want to work for companies who are a force of good in the world. They're asking for that. They're demanding it. People want flexibility at work. They want a true honoring of diversity and inclusion, not just HR speak around it, but they want it to be alive and real at work. So I think there's pressure coming at those Fortune 500 CEOs. And I also see the pressure coming from consumers. Consumers who say, you know, I'm going to vote with my dollars. I'm going to vote for those companies that mirror my values. Those are the businesses I'm going to support. And I think that's part of what we're going to see over the next decade. And so that's real pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. So who are the CEOs and leaders who get it? Who are the people that you feel, you know, these are people who can be role models for the rest of us in the sense that they are doing good and also doing well for their multiple stakeholders?
Yeah. You know, I think there's more out there than we know. I'm going to tell you the story of someone who is part of our CEO storytelling track. His name is Steve McAdam, and he just retired, but he was the CEO of Enpro, which is a manufacturing company. So they make some kind of small parts that are part of airplanes. It's a public company with $1.5 billion dollars in revenues. So it's a big public company. Here he is, the CEO, and he is determined to make this company, what they call at Enpro, a dual bottom line business. So one bottom line has to do, of course, with their financial performance. And the other bottom line, they call human flourishing. They teach mindfulness to all of the workers on the factory floor. They teach people the power, you ready of this, of getting in touch with source.
Source. Wow.
They just call it source.
Yes.
In whatever way it works for you. And how that informs you in your work. They have a council structure where people can form into councils to get changes made at the company. And under Steve's leadership, this manufacturing company had tremendous growth over that 12-year period, and he was able to demonstrate in a test case kind of way that honoring people, listening to them, helping them grow and develop is good for business. And I love that. And you could say, well, what makes Steve such a unicorn or something like that? And I interviewed him actually as part of my research for the Inner MBA. And I think when I called him a unicorn, you know, I mean, he's kind of a traditional, you know, McKinsey consultant before, you know, I think he was like, well, you're calling me a unicorn. I'm like, well, you know, you're very unusual. And what I got when I talked to him is actually he loves, he's not afraid to let his heart be online and to express that. He's not afraid to vulnerably share about his own growth as a person, and that he could see that he needed to grow in order for the company to grow. So those, I think, are the qualities. People who are in touch with their heart. It's not some like, it's not a miracle. Our, you know, just like guidance is always there, the power of our heart is always there too. It's covered over. And it's covered over because we're afraid to get hurt. We're afraid to get rejected. We live in a culture that doesn't honor and value that. And so now we're outliers and we're weirdos and we're the lovey-dovey people at work who are, you know. But I think it's all changing. And yeah, as you use this phrase, the future of work, this is where the future of work is. And these are the future successful CEOs, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. That's so powerful. It reminds me of the research. I don't know if you've read the research by Dr. Barbara Fredrickson. And her book is called Love 2.0. And Love 2.0 talks about how love, which is really micro moments of connection that we feel in our bodies, is actually a universal emotion, but it's actually good for our well-being. It actually helps improve our immunity. It strengthens our vagal tone. It impacts our vagus nerve and impacts all the major organs in the body. And so to the point that you're making, which is, you know, our world is ready for love. It really is in these times.
Well, and what an upside down world. What an upside down world that now we have to like reintroduce love and say it's good at work. I mean, it's like, no, that's the core of what it means to be a social creature, a mammal who bonds with other human beings, as you said, in these micro moments of connection. That's what and who we are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So these are times of incredible pain for a lot of us. And I know that pain can cause us to shut down. And for some of us, it can cause us to open. Tell us about maybe one simple practice, either from the Inner MBA or from your own set of practices, that when we're confronted with pain in our lives, that we can use that pain to be a source of moving ourselves from me to we rather than closing ourselves down.
Mm-hmm. Well, the practice that occurs to me while you're talking is the practice of self-compassion. So Chris Germer, who is a Harvard professor, he'll be teaching that practice within the Inner MBA. And I'm very happy that we have a strong male figure teaching self-compassion, because I think a lot of times people associate it with it being kind of a soft practice, but it actually liberates our strength and power in a really important way. And when I first learned the practice of self-compassion, the way that it was very effective for me is that you can actually place your hand on your heart or even on your face, which is very powerful to feel your own fingers on your cheek. You know, it's such a kind of cradling, or even on your arm, if it's less weird for you, it doesn't matter. And you just say, oh, this is a moment right now of suffering. I'm suffering. This is a moment of pain. Maybe this is a moment where I'm anxious. And so the first thing is just to connect with yourself. And this is the mindful part, just be mindful of what's actually happening. And in it, there's this tone of affection towards yourself because you're touching yourself. And you might be soothing yourself. And you might say something like, it's going to be okay. It's okay. And then, and this is the part that moves us from me to we, lots of people are feeling anxious right now. Not the only one. I can feel this softening and this normalizing that a lot of people are going through this kind of suffering. So I'm bringing this kindness to myself. And I also feel this kindness towards all the people out there who might be having feelings of anxiousness during this uncertain time. And you just rest with that. And there's a way that when we move into that part of us that's befriending ourselves, in our difficulty, that we actually have the ability to come closer to ourselves instead of, as you said, numbing out or rejecting the pain. We actually come into a closer contact with what we're going through, and it melts us. It melts us, and it makes us available to other people and to befriend them as we've befriended ourselves.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it really, it touches me. So my last question is, what keeps you going? 35 years that you've been at it.
Well, I guess I'm going to say two things. A human partnership and a cosmic partnership. The human partnership is with my wife of 20 years. And I think what keeps me going is our love, quite honestly. That love nourishes me and is a reservoir and is my home base as a person. And when I'm down, she's there for me. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is a partnership. And, you know, this one, I'm going to take a sip of tea here. Maybe this would be an editing moment. And then the second thing, and, you know, this is a little vulnerable to talk about. Second thing is, I feel I'm partnered by energies, forces, rivers of light that are bigger than me, that want to work with me and through me to help us evolve. And that partnership is where I get strength, inspiration, ideas, and fortitude.
And what helps you connect with that every day?
Open, open, open. Receive, receive, receive. Surrender, surrender, surrender. Listen, listen, listen.
Beautiful. Thank you for the inspiration.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the great conversation.
Thanks for listening. This is your host, Hannah Anand. Please rate, comment, and share our podcast with those you care about. Be the leader who helps others grow and thrive in times of disruption. You can visit our website at www.transformleaders.tv. There, you'll find other great tools to grow your leadership and be a force for good in these times. Until the next time, my friends.